What kind of law do you practice?
Maritime law.
On what grounds could you possibly prevail?
Grounds? Who cares about grounds? Cases always come down to who the jury likes better.
Mr. Foley, I must warn you that if you attempt to banny rag or bulldoze this witness, I shall take very dim view of it.
Your lordship is most pretty.
Very well, then you may proceed.
Cash settlement. I could have figured that out, you button-down maggot!
You have any cream?
Oh, yes, of course. Where are my manners?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 354. I'm Thomas Smith. I'm a new man. I went in that water tank that Luke is in the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, you know? And I mean, I still sound like crap, but not as bad. How are you doing?
I wanted to say I've been frozen in carbonite or something, but you know, I'm doing great, Thomas. Glad to hear you're on the mend.
Aside from the fact that, you know, you had to watch Jay Sekulow talk, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that takes
a toll.
It is simultaneously the worst thing and the best thing at the same time, right? Like, I now have my own personal metaphor for, like, slowing down to watch a train wreck, right? Because I've never got, like... Like I don't when I'm
I've
driving.
Never gotten to see a train wreck.
Well, no, but like you know, people who like slow down and look at the accident. Like I don't want to see that shit. Right? Sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I've never got that. Now I get it because I am watching.
But if it's a lawyer accident,
yeah, I'm watching the equivalent of a mental train wreck inside the mind of America's dumbest lawyer, Jay Sekulow, and I can't turn away. It's fascinating. So,
all right, we're gonna break that down. We're gonna talk about Tulsi Gabbard's lawsuit. I cannot wait, and then we'll see if I have any voice left for the silent internal screaming I'm gonna be doing the entire time we talk about baseball law, because I'm still mad, still will be mad for quite a while. That the Astros cheated, among other teams possibly. But anyway,
yeah.
All right, so lots to talk about. We'd better just get right into it.
I'll give you a trifecta: a quid pro quo, bribery, or maybe extortion. Or somebody said, one of the members or the members of the House said treason. Have a vague allegation about a non-crime allegation of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. That's a trifecta. Executive privilege. Why would that matter? The Mueller report came to the exact conclusions of what they say. Indeed, that's correct. Not because Manager Schiff said it, but because the Constitution requires it.
So the president mounted his defense, as in a couple of lawyers who, I don't know, should know better, shouldn't know better. They shouldn't know better.
In many ways, they should know better. Yeah, the president got four lawyers to almost be able to talk for two whole hours. That's impressive.
Yeah, I really loved how that was one of the funniest parts, by the way. Because you could tell it's like, you know, a school presentation where your group doesn't have enough.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to use all the time that the other side, you know, use 24 hours. We'll be out of here in 25 minutes. I mean... we shouldn't do that. Let's stretch a little bit.
Let's hold impeachment outside. Oh, God. Yeah, the whole game was given away when Trump complained 2 days ago, you know, my impeachment defense is starting on a Saturday and that's not exactly prime time. Like, that's the point, right? Like, the entirety, yeah. as my son Alex pointed out, I was truly stunned by this. We were watching the main you know House Democratic. We were watching Adam Schiff on Wednesday evening, And Alex said, what do you think Fox News is showing right now? And I said to him, with the delightful naivete that allowed me to confidently predict that Bill Barr would be impeached in April of 2018, I said, look, like, even Fox News has got to show this, right? And so we clicked over, and Fox News had, you know, Tucker Carlson's smug, punchable face up, and literally, like, the impeachment broadcast in a mute box in the corner, while Tucker Carlson and his cadre of the kind of people who would go on the Tucker Carlson show, like, we're just sort of making fun over it. And it's like, oh, okay.
They did the, like, well, they didn't even MST3K it. Like, they just muted it and then talked over it. Like, that's responsible journalism.
It cannot be stressed. Right? Look, like, I get it. Your Uncle Clarence, you're listening. We're a liberal show, whatever. Like, this is not normal. Like, this is not the way that a major cable news network ought to be covering major news. I lack.
They can't even show unadulterated clips of just Democrats talking. Like, they're too worried that that will threaten their, you know, ecosystem of lies and, like, endanger the, you know, their, what they have going on. They can't even, because even if you want to say, like, well, MSNBC is the liberal version of Fox News, okay, they show just the stuff that happens first. Like, they let you just all day, they'll let you watch the people test, I don't know if it's testifying, but making the case, the House managers making the case, and then they analyze it after. And, you know, of course, they probably have a liberal bias in analyzing it after, but at least they just show you the thing. Fox News can't even show you it.
It absolutely, I'm really glad you made that point. You do have to add with audio, because Uncle Frank can come back.
Technically,
they did technically show you. We are likely to have listeners with friends and family members who do the sort of false dichotomy of, well, you know, MSNBC and Fox are equivalent. And we have occasionally mentioned the points of disanalogy over time. Rachel Maddow not getting a daily briefing from President Obama for 8 years, right, is a pretty good point of disanalogy, right? Like, we know Sean Hannity gets talking points from the White House. They coordinate what they're going to say with the White House.
I think he might give talking points. Right. I mean, he might drive the talking points.
But the point that you just made is really, like, just can't be overemphasized. And you and I have said this, and we won't belabor it into the ground, but the idea that 30-40% of the country gets their information from what is a 1960s Soviet era style propaganda machine, that's terrifying. And that's not something I ever thought we would have in this country. And a lot of our structural problems are going to be sort of reducible to, you know, what do you do about people who listen to Fox News and honestly believe, this is my clumsy effort at a segue, tell me how it works, honestly believe that the Mueller report was a total vindication for the president, right?
Yeah.
We saw that coming out of the word. Well, we heard that coming out of the words of Jay Sekulow, America's dumbest lawyer. The Mueller report was a complete vindication for the president. Now, the only reason to say that on national television is to signal, hey, I am only playing to the people who already agree with me.
He started off, I forget if it was him or one of the other idiots, but he started off and was like, look, President Trump is a man of his word. I think it was John Lovett who tweeted, who is that for? It's like, really, nobody think, not even, you know, Trump supporters think that, not even Trump. Nobody thinks that, not a human on the planet thinks that Trump is a man of his word. All right, let's get to it. Anyway, so you didn't find the defense compelling, I take it.
I want to read some things from the defense brief. This is the transcript, and I'm going to go of course to Sekulow's defense, because we warned you that this would happen. We warned you that this would happen before Fiona Hill testified to the House Intelligence Committee. But it became instantly clear afterwards that part of the game of the defense of the president of the United States is advancing a conspiracy theory that was concocted by the Kremlin, runs contrary to all of our intelligence services, and undermines American national security. And by the way, is as false as could possibly be, right? This is the CrowdStrike Ukraine interference in 2016. And I'm going to say I was shocked. I don't know. I mean, shocked is sort of losing its meaning. I was shocked to see Jay Sekulow parrot that kind of. It was really the second thing he said in his block of time on Saturday. The first thing he said was the Mueller report was a total vindication. And then we went into some expert level well poisoning. Here, word for word, is America's dumbest lawyer, Jay Sekulow. We really intend to show over the next several days that the evidence is actually really overwhelming that the president did nothing wrong. Mr. Schiff and his colleagues repeatedly told you that the intelligence community assessment that Russia was acting alone, responsible for the election interference, implying that this somehow debunked the idea that there might be interference from other countries, including Ukraine. I would just point out, you don't even have to go back to our prior episodes. Acting alone does not imply falsely that Ukraine was not involved. It explicitly states it, right? Acting alone means not acting in concert with anyone else. And again, remember that the Q Ukraine CrowdStrike Pizzagate theory is that there was a magic secret server that had all of Hillary Clinton's emails loaded onto it that Ukraine arranged to put in some kind of safety deposit box beneath a series of tubes, right? Like it you cannot simultaneously believe that they did that and believe our intelligence agencies. Right.
Again, because Hillary needed it hidden, but not gone in case, you know, there's like an appointment in there that she forgot about. Yeah. So, oh, I got one of those emails had a coupon that I was going to use.
Bed Bath and Beyond, they'll take that even if they're over 30 days.
It was a
30%
off your entire order. There wasn't just an item and there was no limit on it. So just keep the server for me if you don't mind.
Sekulow continuing. And again, I have and will continue to call Jay Sekulow stupid and because it's true. But even someone as stupid as Jay Sekulow knows 100%. You're welcome to sue us, by the way. Opening Arguments Media, LLC, a Maryland limited liability corporation.
For my deposition and then we can release it. Oh, it's gonna be fun.
It'll be fantastic. Even somebody as stupid as Jay Sekulow is 100% aware that they are lying when he says as follows. Mr. Nadler deployed a similar argument, saying that President Trump thought Ukraine, not Russia, interfered with our last presidential election. And this is basically what we call a straw man argument. Let me be clear. By the way, F you, Jay Sekulow, for stealing my catchphrase. Let me be clear. The House managers, in a 23-hour period, kept pushing this false dichotomy that it was either Russia or Ukraine, but not both. They kept telling you the conclusion of the intelligence community that, and Mr. Mueller, was Russia alone with respect to the 2016 elections. And now I'm skipping a little bit. In fact, let me report. There is a letter dated May 4th, 2018, to Mr. Yuri Lutsenko, the general prosecutor for the Office of the Prosecutor General of Ukraine. It was a letter requesting that his office cooperate with the Mueller investigation involving Ukrainian issues and issues involving Ukraine government or law enforcement officials. It's signed by Senator Menendez, Senator Leahy, and Senator Durbin. I'm doing this to put this in an entire perspective. House managers tried to tell you that the importance, remember the whole discussion, by the way, I'm not editing out. This is just the way Jay Sekulow talks.
Am I still sick? I don't, what's happened? Audience, catch me up.
Remember,
what are these sentences?
The whole discussion, and my colleague, Mr. Inaudible, talked about this between President Zelensky and President Trump and the bilateral meeting in the Oval Office of the White House as if an article of impeachment.
I need to take my temperature. I think I might be back up to
104. That's the end of that. No, I have quoted Jay Sekulow.
Also, we need to bring Mr. Inaudible needs to be a character on the show now.
Mr. Inaudible has been a character on the show the whole time. You just can't hear him.
That's true.
That's the defense.
So translate that from
you cannot translate that into English.
To English.
It could be both Russia and Ukraine. And the reason it could be both Russia and Ukraine is because Democratic senators sent a letter to the general prosecutor in Ukraine asking him to cooperate with the Mueller investigation. One of the reasons you would ask him to cooperate with the Mueller investigation is that that ancillary to the Mueller investigation was the prosecution of Paul Manafort, who basically overthrew the government of Ukraine and installed a pro-Russian stooge as president of Ukraine, who to this day lives in exile in Russia. To call that a non sequitur really is an insult to non sequiturs everywhere. It is just like throwing words into a blender and waiting for it to, leaving the lid off and waiting for it to, vomit it across the room. This is the president's chief defense counsel. So episode's going to go out on Tuesday. By then you will have had, who knows, maybe they'll only use another hour or so on Monday, but you will have had yet more quote testimony. The striking thing that really hit me is that the way in which the House managers, and particularly Adam Schiff, presented their case, I think was really brilliant, right? If you're Adam Schiff, you are among the Fox News crowd being targeted as Shifty Schiff, and he lied about the contents of the call, and he's just out to get the president. And when that is the type going in, right? When that is what you think the jury thinks about you, you play against type. And what Adam Schiff did was I incredibly masterfully introduce very specific pieces of evidence as if this were a motion for summary judgment, playing fairly lengthy clips of deposition testimony of the various witnesses that the House investigatory committees were able to depose, and weaved it into an overall narrative that obviously those listening to our show probably find it compelling, but was designed to get to the point that we have been pushing on the show and continue to push. If you still haven't called your senators, call your senators. Listen to Thursday's episode. Was designed to say, hey, this ought to at least raise questions, right? As we are putting on mounds and mounds of evidence, you ought to say, well, I think we should at minimum figure out if this is true or not. I don't think this rises to the level of just moving to dismiss without hearing from witnesses. We'll know in a week's time if that move was successful. But it is the only move that the Democrats have right now. I thought that presentation was restrained, understated, designed to make Republican senators uncomfortable with just brushing this all under the rug. What do you think?
Specifically what of the whole?
The general approach.
I think, honestly, I'm proud to be Democrat right now. I'm proud that Schiff is a part of this and is the main part of the prosecution here. Also, California, I wish you were my representative. No offense to Matsui, but he's really making Californians look good. And I think we're doing as well as we can, but it's probably a complete lost cause. But as I said last episode, you still have to make them be the bad guys. You can't just be the bad guys for them because you think they're going to be bad guys. So I think we're doing as everything we can. Keep doing everything you can. Again, make them be the bad guys. But, you know, I think you've emphasized this, or I believe we can kind of hold two views. I think you can understand that McConnell and them are just essentially criminals in that they just are going to aid and abet and allow Trump to do whatever. And there's not a whole lot we can do about it if they decide to just be that way. On the other hand, again, we still have to do everything we can. So it doesn't make sense to quit because they're the bad guys, is all I'm saying. So it doesn't mean that we think McConnell's going to all of a sudden have a heart of gold and, like, be, you know, change his mind or something. Right. We're not that dumb. Like, you'd have to be really stupid to think that.
But look, there is, I've been.
But there are a few moderates that may be able to sway the votes to get, you know, to get the witnesses heard at least. And we do what we can.
And I've been toying with this idea over the weekend. Let me test it out on you, see what you think. If you are solely 100% self-interested in, first, your career as a Republican senator, and then as a distant second, the overall health of the Republican Party insofar as that supports number one, right? So you are just a craven, political, self-interested Republican senator. I know this is a hard hypothetical to envision, but take that person. Yes, process, and understanding that process arguments kind of suck, right? Like, there, it's easier to make a substantive argument than an argument about fairness. Aren't you a little bit worried of going quickly to a vote on a motion to dismiss and hear nothing else, understanding that what that will do is completely galvanize the and unify the entire Democratic Party? It will put Liz Warren, Bernie Sanders back on the campaign trail. Amy Klobuchar shouldn't discount her as well. And they will be armed with, we just saw a sham trial. We put on 23 hours of opening statements. We played you 15 hours of specific evidence over and over again. And Republicans said, we don't even want to hear this. We don't want to investigate. We don't want to see. We don't want to call witness. We just want to say, okay, well, everything's fine. Nothing to see here. I have to think there's some political risk in terms of that. Yeah, not as big, not as much risk as, you know, having 100% of the evidence come out against Trump. I agree with that. But, you know, I don't know. Am I too optimistic? Is that too much of an optimist?
It's so hard,
Brian?
Because none of this makes sense to me. I mean, I'm trying my best, but like you say, I mean, of course they're all self-interested first and foremost, you know, and given that that's the case, I don't understand. Do they think Trump's going to be in office forever? You know, how long do they think this can last? I mean, how likely do they see Trump winning in 2020, I guess, is what I wonder. You know, if they're sitting there, well, I don't know. On the other hand, nobody ever suffers consequences for anything, I guess. So maybe they ride this out as long as they can. And then even if Trump gets voted out in 2020, their voters and whatever their state is going to be probably will still reward them. So who knows? I do understand the incentives, because I guess I don't fully.
I don't, and I have never understood. Right? I mean, like, look, I can explain Lindsey Graham, and I have done so repeatedly. Right? Lindsey Graham made the calculation explicitly. It's worse for me to be anti-Trump and lose in a primary in South Carolina than pro-Trump and lose in the general election. We've described that. And look, Lindsey Graham can and should, and God willing, will lose in this election cycle. But I get the leverage over him. I don't get Jeff Flake, right? I don't get right now where we're just barely hearing from Lamar Alexander, right? Like, I don't get people who otherwise have nothing to lose, who have sort of ridden off into the sunset and who did not otherwise
they're
take advantage.
They're quitting
of,
because of Trump.
Yeah.
And they're not, they don't want to go out in a blaze of glory of any kind, or at least like a moderate amount of dignity.
It
go
is,
out in a moderate amount of dignity.
Go, there we go. That's that. Let's hoist that
it's
banner.
A new blaze of glory.
Hey, can I part of the way in which I suffer for our listeners, I watched Alan Dershowitz on the Laura Ingraham show.
Oh my God.
Can I talk about Alan Dershowitz lying? Because this is kind of amazing. So Laura Ingraham, who may be the worst person on Fox News. I mean, Carlson. Yeah, the Tucker Carlson is way up there. Like Sean Hannity, it's just I've gotten to the point where I can like put the mute button on in my brain and literally all I hear is him screaming. So, you know, she is real bad. So she had Alan Dershowitz on, who first effusively thanked her for not engaging in hard questions. That was 100%. I'm not making that up. He said in a reference to the CNN interview, he said, well, you know, it's so great to, you know, be on in a format where I don't have two people ganging up on me in an accidental, like, you said the quiet
poor
part loud.
Poor zillionaire lawyer. You can't handle people asking you questions. Your job. Opening Arguments is brought to you by Lightstream. Folks, the holidays are over, and it's a brand new year. And if you're thinking about the high-interest credit cards you used over the holidays and the bills that might be coming next, here's an idea to ease your mind. Pay off your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Roll multiple credit card payments into just one payment at a lower fixed rate. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. That's much lower than the national average of over 20% APR. Plus, there are absolutely no fees, no application fees, no origination fees, transaction fees, no prepayment penalties, and the application is quick and easy. You can apply right from your phone. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Just for our listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/OA. That's lightstream.com/OA. That's subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/OA for more information.
So, yeah, I want to call attention to two particular, I'm going to say falsehoods, right? So, first, Dersh came on to try and say that, you know, that bit in CNN where in 1998 he said that you didn't have to have a crime to impeach, and now you do, that wasn't his fault. And I'm just going to read you Alan Dershowitz's words, because this is astonishing for one of the most recognizable lawyers in the country to say. Quote, "The issue was whether it was a high crime, so I didn't do the research. I relied on people like Professor Larry Tribe, who said you didn't need a technical crime. That turns out to be wrong. You may not need crime. The critical point is that obstruction of Congress and abuse of power are clearly not within what the framers intended, and I will lay out that argument quite clearly with sources, and I'm sure other members of the Trump team will do the same." It's my first day is not exactly a great argument when you're Alan Dershowitz. And the idea that Alan Dershowitz would rely on others, including Larry Tribe, you know, who he's got to get a dig in there, like that is, I wouldn't say that on this.
That's
show.
Armature stuff. Yeah. That's armature stuff.
Yeah. I'm out of words for how ridiculous that is. Next. Laura says, "Now, Alan, why did you want to be called a constitutional representative rather than like everybody else? I mean, you have to have a special title. Everybody else is just part of the team." And Dersh says, "No, it's exactly what I did. It's what I did in the O.J. Simpson case and what I did in the second Klaus von Bülow case. I'm of counsel. I have a special role to perform. My role is to present the constitutional argument. I'm not meeting with the team on strategic issues. I'm not involved in whether witnesses should be called or whether facts should be alleged. My argument is limited, as it was in OJ, where I just argued the legal issues, and that's very common. And I just want to say, as somebody who was Alan Dershowitz's student in 1994, while he was on the OJ legal defense team, two things. Number one, he was a member of OJ's legal defense team, proudly, did not call himself a constitutional representative or whatever. He was very clearly on the OJ defense team. We discussed that in class. I had him for criminal law every single class period. And number two, the idea that he was not meeting with the other members of the defense team and engaged on specific facts is also 100% false. And in fact, often solicited comments from students. I had a friend of mine named Ben who wrote an entire 3-page paper on explaining the thumps that Cato Kalin might have heard in connection with the case, and was saying, like, look, you know, that can be an air conditioner. And he said he was standing on top of an air conditioner. I don't even remember the point of the thumps anymore, right? Like, this is OJ. It was 25 years ago. But what I do know was Alan Dershowitz 100% was involved with factual witnesses, strategy, the full level of the OJ defense team.
He's
now,
just full of crap.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah.
It just is. And it's, again, I refer back to the episode that we did, like, I took 3 classes with Alan Dershowitz in law school. And if there were more, I would have taken more, right? He was an inspiration to me in many ways. And it was very, very hard for me to get to this point. I'm not throwing him under the bus because now he's defending Trump or whatever. This is a long time in coming. And it's sad. It's sad for me to see. And so there you go. That's day one of the Trump impeachment defense team.
Yeah, I guess we'll keep an eye on it and see if it's even worse. It's the upside down world, so it's hard to really give much response to what they're trying to say. I don't know. It's impossible. All right. Well, we've got to get to even more craziness in Tulsi Gabbard's lawsuit.
Thank you, Dr. Hibbert. I rest my case.
You rest your case?
What? Oh, no, I thought that was just a figure of speech. Case closed.
Wow. It was funny because I saw, so she's sued Hillary Clinton for $50 million, right? And I think she's also in the past sued Google for $50 million or something. But it's just so funny because just today I saw when you see the candidates on, I think it's a Facebook thing or some sort of social media thing where it's like, hey, donate now. We've got to get to, you know, we've got to get to $1.5 million by blah, blah, blah. And you see the little status bar thing on the donations.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one for Tulsi. I was like, wait, you're not factoring in your $50 million windfall you're about to get. Hold on. I can move that bar quite a bit right now. That's any time you're going to have that coming in. So don't, you know, why are you asking me for donations? So let's break down the Tulsi Gabbard defamation lawsuit.
Yeah, and we're going to do this the same way we usually do, reading a complaint backwards. But we're going to make two kind of preliminary exceptions, because I am going to tell you, I'm going to back this up with specific citations to the complaint. To the extent that this lawsuit has been characterized as suing Hillary Clinton over saying that Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian asset, that is correct. The defining paragraph that sets forth what is referred to as the capital D, capital S defamatory statements are those three sentences sort of taken, I don't want to say taken out of context from Hillary Clinton appearing on David Plouffe's podcast. You broke that down on which episode of SIO was that? I thought you and Jamie did a really, really excellent job with that back in October. So
yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Anyway.
Yeah, I did. But it might be important because she didn't, by the way, she didn't even name Tulsi Gabbard. It's also not clear from the context because I went back and I've listened to it a bunch of times, and what people thought she said is not quite what she said. And it's not even clear she's talking about, it's not even clear she intends to call Tulsi Gabbard any sort of Russian asset. She calls Jill Stein a Russian asset. And when she does, she says, oh, and that's someone who's also a Russian asset. And so the implication is kind of like also meaning you intended to call the last person one as well, you know? So it's kind of, it's this anyway, there's so much ambiguity in what she said. So I'll be very curious to see how this lawsuit paints it.
I think that's, and this is, it's why I wanted to sort of clear this point up first, because that there is ambiguity, and what happens is, I'm going to read Clinton's exact words, and I'm going to say, I mean, let me bracket all of this. I do not think disputing that she called Tulsi Gabbard a Russian asset is a smart aspect of the defense strategy, right? I don't think it's clear, but I certainly wouldn't. If I were the lawyer, I would say the situation is not the way it is portrayed by Tulsi Gabbard in the lawsuit for the reasons that I'm about to explain. But we assume for purposes of this motion to dismiss that she did. So, right. Hillary Clinton says she's the favorite of the Russians. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far. And that's assuming Jill Stein will give it up, which she might not, because she's also a Russian asset. And then pluff. Inaudible, right? There's just a burble on the podcast. And then Clinton says, yeah, she's a Russian asset. I mean, totally. And again, there's a little bit of pronoun antecedent there, right? Like that grammatically, that sounds like grammatically, that definitely refers to Stein. In context, it's ambiguous whether that refers to Stein or to the unknown candidate. That again, look, I don't want to play too fast and loose. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We know that means Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh yeah, we know she's talking about Tulsi. Yeah. So no, I wasn't trying to pretend otherwise.
Yeah, and I don't think we should. So yeah, call that step negative one. Right, we could dispute the factual premise, but let's not. And I think that obscures the issues. So sure, let's assume Hillary Clinton called Tulsi Gabbard a Russian asset. As we said on Thursday's show, kind of strikes you intuitively that you ought to be free to call a candidate a Russian asset during a political campaign season. And in fact, historically, we know that this happens all the time. So now we move to step zero, which we always do in defamation cases, which is there an operative anti-slap statute, right? As we discussed.
Oh, I thought we were going to ask, is Hillary Clinton a public person? Yeah. I think the answer is yes.
I think that. Maybe. Yeah. No. And this came out, I thought, really, really well and in a fun way with Carrie Poppy and Matthew Striar at our live show. California is a robust state with one of the very best anti-slap statutes, that is strategic lawsuits against public participation. What they do is they specifically provide expedited procedures for getting defamation cases dismissed when the purpose of the lawsuit is to try and intimidate you from not talking about matters of public concern. This 100% is a matter of public concern. Spoiler, New York is one of the very worst states in terms of anti-slap. So yeah, and I don't know why, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. Maybe this will spawn some change. Not the least of which is, right, like, I would think the New York Times would have some political clout. New York's anti-slap laws are found at the New York Civil Rights Law sections 70A and 76-A, and then another section of the New York Code. And it protects slaps brought by individuals or entities seeking permits or applications from a governmental body over efforts by the defendant to report on, comment on, rule on, challenge, or oppose such applications. You think about it like you have some kind of a permit, right? You know, you get a liquor license, or you want to get a zoning permit to put a particular building in a particular place. You and only you are privileged to bring an anti-slap suit in New York. That does not apply to Hillary Clinton, who is not trying to, you know, build a bar somewhere. Although, Hillary, if you're listening and you build a bar, I will come patronize your bar. But no, she's not. So because she's not a public applicant or permittee, there will be no expedited procedure to get rid of this. And so what that means, spoiler, is that it is highly like if I were Hillary Clinton's lawyers, this is Hillary Clinton has better lawyers than me. So, you know, you don't need to take this piece of free advice. I would not move to dismiss this case. I would answer the complaint and say, yeah, we welcome discovery. Let's bring it on. I would do that because I feel fairly confident in saying that Hillary Clinton can afford to pay her lawyers for this. Yeah. And so what will happen if she moves to dismiss, right? A motion to dismiss says, if we assume that all the facts are true, it does not state a cause of action under law. There is a good argument, right? There's the argument that I made. But there is also the case that in a defamation lawsuit, right? Like, you would want to say, okay, well, let's see all the facts and all the context and all of everything first, and then we can proceed from there. And I would not want to run the risk. I know this is going to be hard for her lawyers to hear because I'm very often in their shoes, right? And you,
yeah, right. Won't her lawyers be like, all right, more billable hours?
Well, but also what you want to do is when you assure a client that a lawsuit is nonsense, right? You're then like, yeah, great, we're going to move to dismiss. Well, are we going to win? Well, yeah, we're probably 2-1 to win this lawsuit, right? To win our motion to dismiss. And I would say that's right? Like, if I were estimating this and it were my client and my client were not Hillary Clinton, I would say, yeah, look, like, we have a really, really strong case that this just does not state a legal claim, even if everything is as it says. But, you know, the downside risk is it's defamation, right? It's about, you can always kind of say it's about how this was perceived. And, you know, there's some risk that the judge will allow it to go forward. It's why I think you should just embrace that mantle. But now let's read the actual complaint. Okay. First step we always do is we scroll to the very end of the complaint and we see who are the lawyers who brought this complaint. And here, holy clown horn, it is Pierce Bainbridge, Beck, Price, and Hecht, which is a real law firm. At one point, one of the fastest growing law firms in America. They were formed in 2017. They now have offices in 5 different cities from another big firm, Quinn Emanuel. Incidentally, a firm with which I interviewed way back at the dawn of recorded time. And they have a very ambitious litigation practice, right? It is a trial lawyers firm. If you want some fun connections, and I know you do, Pierce Bainbridge also represents both Rudy Giuliani and George Papadopoulos. Look, and I don't want to put too much into that, right? Like, particularly big firms, some big firms have a reputation as being politically leaning one way or the other. But many big firms have a split identity, right? And are just like, hey, look, we're capitalists. Like, we, you know, you want to tell me I shouldn't take Rudy Giuliani's money? Like, okay, great. But I'm going to take Rudy Giuliani's money. So, you know, and Covington and Burling is a really, really good example of that. While I was there, the entire antitrust division at Covington and Burling, with which I did considerable amounts of work, had worked in the Department of Justice under Ronald Reagan, right? And were some of the most politically conservative people I knew. Present day Covington has sent people into both the Obama and the Trump administrations. So, you know, you don't necessarily impute identity, but it is kind of noteworthy that, you know, Pierce Bainbridge represents both Giuliani and Papadopoulos. also, looking at the specific lawyers, I'm going to first talk. There are 3 lawyers who are listed on the complaint. David Hecht. David Hecht is he's one of the named partners, right? He's the 5th guy in the whole firm. He's an IP lawyer. He's the one who tried the Apple versus Samsung case. He's a big deal. He's a super good lawyer. Not a defamation lawyer, but he's really good. Dan Terzian is also on there. He's a partner. He's a litigator. He was at big firms. He's got real credentials. Lead counsel is Brian Dunn, and Brian Dunn is Tulsi Gabbard's lawyer. He's represented her in all of her lawsuits, including her in all of her major lawsuits, including her lawsuit against Google. He is also.
Let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
How is she funding this? You can't use campaign funds for this kind of thing, could you?
No, you cannot. So That's a really good question.
How much does she get paid to go on Tucker Carlson's White Power Hour?
Yeah, I don't know. I do know she's done that.
She goes on a lot.
She's done that like some 30-odd times during the Obama administration. She appeared on various Fox News programs. So, yeah, Brian Dunn, also an accomplished lawyer, but if you want more, like, and again, we're lampshading this a little bit. If I were trying to figure out the political identification of Brian Dunn, I would point out that he clerked for Jay Bybee. Jay Bybee was the associate attorney general under George W. Bush, who signed off on Fredo Gonzalez's torture memos before being appointed to the Ninth Circuit. He's a very conservative guy. And that before that, he clerked for Susan Reed in the New York State Supreme Court, the New York Court of Appeals. Also a Republican nominee. Now, again, I clerked for the most conservative judge on the Maryland Court of Appeals. So, you know, you want to do that cautiously. But I will tell you, when I look at Brian Dunn's CV, when I look at his clients, when I look at his history, when I look at his background, this screams Republican to me. It's kind of weird. Now, again, I have some Republican clients, right? So, you know, there's no law if you're Tulsi Gabbard saying that you have to hire, you know, an Andrew Torres to represent you. But if you're thinking, boy, does Tulsi Gabbard seem to associate with a lot of Republicans for a Democrat? This is a little bit more, you know, a little bit more evidence
almost on exclusively.
That. Yeah. Okay, so now we've read the bottom of the complaint. Let's scroll backwards.
And like you said, I mean, the point is real lawyers. Most of the time when we read these, it's somebody who does Planet Earth Federation law, like fictional stuff. But like this is real. Okay,
yeah.
So let's see how they did.
So then we go back and we read the cause of action, right? This is a one count complaint. It is defamation. And it is related to that statement. The key paragraphs here are paragraph 53, which alleges that this is defamatory per se. The importance of alleging that defamation is defamation per se is has to do with damages. And you mentioned that the lawsuit seeks $50 million in damages. Damages are also an element of proving the offense, right? So in other words, if I prove the classic example, let's go back to the one that I always use, which is you allege that I trespass on your property. The significance of defamation per se is that proving damages is an element of the crime in addition to it's the money you get if you win, right? And let's use
right. You have to. So it's different. You have to prove that the words caused you damage, right? Whereas if it's defamation per se, you don't have to do that. It's just assumed.
It's just presumed. That's exactly right. Okay. Yeah. So right, like let's take our classic trespass example, right? Like it is technically trespass, right? If I come by and I walk on your front yard, right? You can be like, you're trespassing on my property, and like, right? Technically, that's true, but. If, you know, if it's just my foot happens to hit the edge of your grass from the public sidewalk, then you would bring the lawsuit and my defense would be one of the elements of this tort has not been proven, which is you didn't suffer any damages, right? Like, you know. Now you do if, you know, I sneak over your fence and I break stuff and, you know, steal stuff. But if my foot just happens to hit the edge of your grass, even if everything else is there, that's not a tort.
If I remember my law from being a brilliant and studied lawyer, there's like what? There's like moral turpitude, moral turpentine, something like that. There's I don't know that I would think that saying someone is a Russian asset would be defamation per se. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like you'd need to prove why that matters. You know, like
So as it turns out in New York, the four standards are. Number one, it's defamation.
Like venereal disease.
Yeah.
There's a couple. old-timey ones.
You are so dead on. It's funny. So number one, charging a person with a serious crime. Okay. Being a Russian asset doesn't fit that category. Two, to injure another in his or her trade, business, or profession.
Yeah, right.
Three,
yeah.
to claim that the plaintiff has a loathsome disease.
Yeah.
Or four, to impute unchastity to a woman. And again, I will point out that was repeated.
Put it under that category, I guess. Not loyal to America, I don't know.
Yeah. No, the argument as made, and here I'm just going to quote, this is paragraph 53, the defamatory statements, and again, remember, that is accusing you of being a Russian asset, falsely impute Tulsi with a lack of fitness for her office and profession.
Yeah.
They would tend to harm, and indeed have harmed, Tulsi in both her office and profession, both political and military, and they have assailed her integrity. They tend to expose and have exposed her to contempt, ridicule, aversion, or disgrace. And then it says they falsely impute criminal conduct to Tulsi. That last part is the most ridiculous, right? Because we can say you're disloyal to America without saying you have committed the official crime of treason, right? Like, in fact, we've been over that, right? So you could be actively working to bring down the United States as a Russian agent and nevertheless, like, not be accused of committing a crime. Well, hell, I do that all the time when I am talking to liberals on Twitter who want to spread the, like, yeah, well, you know, why does it matter? They're all the same. And I'm like, you do understand that you are acting as a Russian agent when you do that, right? And I mean that with 100% sincerity, right? Like, we know.
Who wants to go in with me on suing Torres for $50 million? I'll give you half.
Yeah. Send it to openarguments@gmail.com and ignore the fact that I read a lot of the emails. But okay. So that is the defamatory per se section. And the question is, there is calling somebody a Russian asset attributing unfitness for their profession. And here, if you squint, this is what I mean. Okay, so look, obviously, no, right? There's zero cases that say calling somebody a Russian asset or a Chinese asset or a communist asset is defamation per se. And in fact, some of the major cases have this issue as part of the component to it, right? So, for example, Gertz versus Welch is a major defamation case. The underlying allegations in that case related to a John Birch Society publication calling Gertz a communist sympathizer, right? So you might say, okay, well, that kind of fits. But in that case, there were allegations of specific illegal conduct. Gertz was a lawyer, and he had won a civil case against a police officer. And then the John Birch Society was basically like, oh, yeah, but that was all, you know, fake news. And Gertz conspired with the prosecutor to have him framed. And, you know, so there was much more on the bones, right? It wasn't just saying, like, Gertz is a communist. And by the way, like, this kind of allegation is exactly the kind of allegation that is described in New York Times v. Sullivan, right? If you go, this is page 273 of that decision and footnote 14, because we were talking about a public official. Now, the public official there was a candidate for New York City Commissioner. Hillary Clinton, I think, probably slightly more prominent than a New York City Commissioner.
Probably.
But Sullivan says injury to official reputation affords no more warrant for repressing speech than would otherwise be free than does factual error. This is true even when utterances contain half-truths and misinformation. Suppressing such speech can be justified, if at all, only by a clear and present danger of the obstruction of justice. Hmm. If judges, and then there's some cases about how prior to New York Times v. Sullivan, that it was basically okay to, like, say that judges were corrupt, right? Like, the judge couldn't turn around and sue you, right? So there were a bunch of cases that were sort of on that track.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's something you'd want to be able to do in America.
Yeah, exactly right. And so then Sullivan says, if judges are to be treated as men of fortitude, able to thrive in a hardy climate, surely the same must be true of other governmental officials, such as elected city commissioners. criticism of their official conduct does not lose its constitutional protection merely because it is effective criticism and hence diminishes their official representations.
That's a good response.
I thought that was a pretty good response. Now, there are some old, old cases. Still good law. One is from 1949. One is from 1952. The 1952 was a Tenth Circuit case called State Farm Bureau Federation versus National Farmers Union Service Corp, which says, it is generally accepted that calling someone a communist sympathizer is to subject such person or organization to public hatred, odium, and contempt to his immediate harm and is therefore libelous per se. Now, I would say that that's probably slightly different in 1952. Those cases predate New York Times v. Sullivan. There are lots of reasons to distinguish them. But this is why I said what I said at the outset, right? Which is, these are not great arguments, but they're better than, for example, Trump's legal arguments, right? They're not imaginary arguments. They don't depend on lies or misrepresentations of fact. And so when I say something like, you could lose a motion to dismiss, this is one of the things that I mean, that you could lose on a motion to dismiss. Again, not because you ought to, but because the general view of a judge is, well, let's just, you know, figure it out. The complaint also alleges the New York Times standard, this is paragraph 57, that Clinton knew the statements were false or acted in disregard, reckless disregard of the truth or falsity of the statements. As we are reading backwards now, what we would ordinarily do, we have already done, which is we would go through and figure out, okay, what exactly are the facts that are alleged here, right? And those facts are pretty clear, but we can go up to that. It's paragraph 17.
Well, before we hear paragraph 17, we've got to take one more quick ad break, and then we'll hear about paragraph 17, everybody. Opening Arguments is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. It's the new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/OA makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the same day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/OA. That's ziprecruiter.com/OA. One more time, ziprecruiter.com/OA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, let's hear about that paragraph.
and here is where I think things really start to collapse. So paragraph 17 says, it's the campaign HQ with David Plouffe, right? Clinton stated the following regarding, quote, somebody who is currently in the Democratic primary who, quote, they are grooming to be the third party candidate. And this is the entirety of what they quote, these three sentences. She's the favorite of the Russians. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far. And that's assuming Jill Stein will give it up, which she might not, because she's also a Russian asset. Yeah, she's a Russian asset. We went through the grammatic construction of that. But now what I want to add, in addition to the general weak tenor of that allegation, is that it is, and this is a point that you actually touched on in the SIO episode, Breaking It Down. It is consistent to say that somebody is an asset of the Russians to say that that means that they are an unwitting asset of the Russians. Right. And when you look at the allegations specifically in the first two sentences from that, which are the only ones that get that right, the predicate to calling a Russian asset, they're not about things that Tulsi Gabbard is alleged to have done. Right. They say she's the favorite of the Russians. Well, how the hell does Tulsi Gabbard know whether or not she's the favorite of the Russians? Right. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far. That is factually true. That is supported by accurate reporting from The Guardian and elsewhere. that Russian bots swarmed out and supported Tulsi Gabbard. That dates back to February of 2018. Those are the two factual allegations. And as far as I can tell, it is either something that cannot be proven false for sentence number one and something that is proven true in sentence number two. Neither of those is a statement about anything that Tulsi Gabbard has done. And if you were going to move to dismiss, that would be the basis for moving to dismiss. And when I look through the case law, I cannot find, there an edge case somewhere. There might be an edge case somewhere, but I find a lot of cases, including a recent one involving an alleged communist sympathizer named Tu Nguyen, where the allegations are not directed against the actions of the individual bringing the defamation lawsuit. Courts have said that's not defamation, right? The court finds it need not address issues of damages because the allegedly defamatory statement is not a verifiable fact. I don't know how you can verify the fact of favorite of the Russians. That's not a thing that we can prove in discovery. There is zero evidence that Hillary Clinton or Tulsi Gabbard can introduce during discovery to help weigh in on that. So if you want the argument for why you should move to dismiss, there's your continuing support on that. So I think Hillary Clinton ought to just answer the complaint and say, okay, great. Well, we're gonna depose Tulsi Gabbard. We're going to seek all of the documents because we are going to prove that she is a Russian asset. And if you're Tulsi Gabbard and you filed this lawsuit, when the very first thing I would do as Hillary Clinton's lawyers is say, okay, I want all communications between you and any Russian government official or person connected to any official of the Russian government from now, you know, dating back to and pick a time, right? 2012, right? Go back a decade and do that, and then do for any Russian business interests, right? And she's going to howl and complain about undue burden, but that's the core, right? You've said, I've defamed you by calling you a Russian asset. You've denied that you are. Let's see what your documents show. Let's see what those connections are. We know that Tulsi Gabbard, right, has, we shouldn't say what we know. Because I've egged on that lawsuit in calling her a Russian asset. I would be very interested in seeing what those documents show. How about we say that?
Okay, sure. We you don't want to say what we suspect? What we?
Why don't you say what we suspect,
Thomas? I don't know what you suspect. Now I want to know. Don't put me on the hot seat. I don't. Tulsi's lawyers, I don't know. I mean, I'll still do a deposition for the entertainment value.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
I don't know.
I would love to see you get deposed over this. This would be fantastic.
Well, I would probably do, you know, we talked about this when we did the Alex Jones deposition for Lamb, which was so good, by the way, everybody, that we had to release it on the main feed. So hopefully everybody's heard it, but just an indicator that you should be listening to Lamb every month because it's awesome. But anyway, I would probably just do, you know, get together with, I don't know if I want to implicate you, but I'd get together with my attorney and come up with the strategy to be the most unhelpful witness. It would be a lot of what Alex Jones did, and it'd be fun. It'd be good times.
Yeah, and I do want to correct my dating error. This is still the like writing out 2020, and it's
don't
full
we
on all,
all
my checks. Yeah. Not that, but I do have some confessions on that that maybe we'll put on a Patreon special. Now, I said February 2018, February 2019 is when NBC News. Yeah. Robert Windrum and Ben Popkin published an NBC News analysis of the main English language news sites employed by Russia in its 2016 election meddling. And that demonstrates that, quote, Representative Tulsi Gabbard has become a favorite of the sites Moscow used when it interfered in 2016. End of quote. I will say this, since that language is word for word identical to the language that Hillary Clinton used on David Plouffe, repeating something that was reported in a reputable news outlet is 100% a defense to, at minimum, the New York Times v. Sullivan actual malice standard of proving defamation, right? Because you can't act with reckless disregard for the truth if what you're repeating is something a reputable journalist said. And that's what they said. When we looked at, and specifically, since Gabbard announced her intention to run on January 11th, there have been at least 20 Gabbard stories on three major Moscow-based English language websites affiliated with or supportive of the Russian government. RT, the Russian-owned TV outlet, Sputnik News, a radio outlet, and Russia Insider, a blog that experts say closely follows the Kremlin line. The CIA has called RT and Sputnik part of, quote, Russia's state-run propaganda machine, end of quote. So once again, you know, I've decided to throw caution to the wind. Like, these are the facts as we know them from responsible, vetted, mainstream journalistic sources. And I would love to know what other connections there are between Tulsi Gabbard and Russia. So Hillary, if you're listening, please fight on. Please fight on. Interesting. So there we go.
Very interesting. All right. Well, Andrew, it's been a while, but this was a wild card segment failure. This was such a wild card segment failure that we didn't even plan it as a wild card segment. You turned a non-wild card segment into a wild card and then failed it.
I'm sorry. Okay. I so want to talk about the Astros. This is so fascinating, and there are so many really, really good questions. I want to add, in addition to this, give a little teaser. I have been approached, and I'm going to give a guest lecture at the University of Maryland on baseball law, and specifically on MLB's antitrust exemption and current legal issues. I have secured permission to air that on the show. So I have lots of baseball to share with all of you. I'm very, very excited about it. We can't do a 2-hour show here. So it's on me, and I'm sorry.
Sorry, everyone. It's not just the length of the show. It's also that, you know, some of us have wives and a baby and a toddler that we have set time that we could record, and it's hard to go beyond that time. So sorry about that. All right. That said, we have just enough time to thank our top patrons, our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats over at patreon.com/law. And I don't think I can make you read all of these, Andrew. I'll try to pull my weight around here, and we'll see how much Brian has to edit my coughing. But we begin with officially announcing OA Live Show in Minneapolis. This podcast has a live show. It's SEATTLE.
is that an Oscar Mayer reference?
I think so. Yeah, has the first great name. I like it. Keep it up, good, Everybody. Come to Seattle so I can change my Patreon name. Hey, we've just proven you can keep changing it, but still harp on the same thing. Ian Buckley, Ziegenhagen, oi, oi, oi. Adam Larson, Kristen Daniel, Thomas Harvey Kriegel, Ted Liu telling earthlink.net using lawyers to shove it since 2020. Colleen Wilson. I don't even know what that's directly in reference to. I just love it. Like, it's just funny in and of itself. I'm P. Andrew Torres, and I approve this message. Murray Gregerson, Wafflecopter. India is shooting students protesting against bigotry. That's an important issue. One of the many important issues that's kind of hard to keep focus on with everything that's wrong with the world. Can we get CERT to appeal all of Thomas's incorrect T3B answers? Hey, what incorrect T3BE answers? You know, like, come on. I'm killing it over here. We'll find out. Well, how about today's? Today's I probably got wrong. Help open a cooperative DIY auto garage in Atlanta. Ooh. Cornergarage.coop. Huh, very interesting. Seattle or Portland live show. I'll bring scotch. Oh, spin my nipple nuts and send me to Alaska.
great Crichton reference there.
Mitch McConnell looks like a white melting Mr. Potato Head. Yeah, that's true. Portland live show. Amber Green. Clear eyes. Full hearts. Totally clear. Zirkle. Freudian faceplant. Clown Hornet, Dallas Live Show, Whiteboard, Punch It, Brenda. Brenda. Nobody expects the Seattle Live Show. Our chief weapon is surprise. I think by now it's the most expected live show, I gotta say. Emily Rainbow Spence. The next lamb should be the murder trial of Tim Heidecker. I watched that. It's really funny. I like that one a lot. The unprecedented, resented, demented president defenestrated. Jason Kopus, come to Rochester. Oh, is it pronounced like
Rochester? Yeah.
Rochester. Why is that different than Worcester, which is pronounced Worcester? Shouldn't this be Rooster? Why not?
Come to Rooster. All right, yeah, I'm gonna start a new petition to rename it Rooster, yeah. New York.
Or I have this crazy idea. Why don't we just say all the letters that are in stuff mostly? Rochester,
mostly
New York for a live show. Capture the upstate New York tedium. Raleigh Live Show will present Thomas with Kevlar hockey socks. Yeah, that works. I need like full pants though, because it's above my knee where I keep cutting myself. I've been under a rock since Christmas. I recommend it. Hotspear.com, open water swim buoys keep you visible and your valuables safe. You can make more money with a flop than with a hit. Dragonfly.eco, books about nature and the environment, reviews and interviews. Alec Emke, it's legal, it's advice, it's not legal advice. Michelle Cloud, demand better crooks. Lamar Beeblebrox 2020. Nate Drex, stuff and polls. Spoon feed your kid from the grave because you know they are a F up. Huh, okay. Seattle Show, have gourmet food, whiskey, wine, and dogs and cats to snuggle. Darth Mandy Pants, Trump is in a peach, now what? Brewing, 13th century Saxony gravel truck lawyer. The Mandarin, Pain Don't Hurt, Jennifer Kratch, Catherine Connell, Nightmare on Pennsylvania Avenue, Longtime Citizen, First Time Impeacher, Which Grisham Is It Anyway? Everything's Bugged and the Law Doesn't Matter. I'm Here Because Diogenes the Cynic Was Right. Law is Free Source Code of Society, Yet Lawyers Don't Starve. FSF.org. Jeff Gelbach, Slowly Approaching the Halfway Point of the Patron List. Nice. Clownhorn, your clownhorning annuity. I keep my 501c3. CivilPoliticsRadio.com. Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley Free Radio. The Registry Matters podcast. Help, they changed the app and I can't change my name. Well, it sounds like you did. Andrea, the Arbitrary and Capricious. John Bilderbeck. Forts 1, 2, 3,000 strikes you're impeached at the Corrupt Intention Game. Live show in Seattle or Tacoma before the Army moves us in July. I think we can commit to that. Gerrymandering is abuse of power, and your turn.
All right, and thank you to P. Andrew Tortoise to 3 exclamation points. I don't know if that's just, do you want me to scream? I can do that. Knock, knock, who's there? Clownhornvoting.com asking you to vote in 2020. Well, that's good. Eric Alsman, Clownhorn the Live Show. I just want dinner in Seattle. Can't we keep telling you? You can do that. Denver Live Show is likely to be hilarious. Payne Strumpet, Thomas Smith is my favorite attorney, Andrew is a close second, Trambolus, Napoleon, Kiwa Valley Exports for Australian, Red Meat, Craft Beer, The Wandering Gambler. Let me be totally clear, I like being totally clear, and I liked this until Jay Sekulow said it. If precedence has you down, make it original with pretext. That's good. Milo Meadsong suggests the Tipping the Scales podcast. Adam Costa, I'm very, 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 very sorry for not changing my name more often. Well, forgiven. Excited about the Melbourne live show. That's actually on the whiteboard. Jay Aldenwalt, our favorite karaoke legend, Cosmo Blues. Thomas, when are you and I going to go sing karaoke with Cosmo Blues? That's good. We gotta put that on the list.
Good idea.
Join your labor union. Together we bargain. Alone we beg. Allow me to be totally queer. I enjoy being totally queer. Well, good. Good for you. I killed Ned Thompson to distract you from my other crimes. James Call, my Patreon payment is experiencing a programmatic delay. No, don't do that. Thanks to no. To Shabbos Gay Services, don't pull your own lever on the Sabbath. All right. Anonymous, Moving on to other jokes, but Chicago Knife Sharpening Party is still on. Hey, we're there. Mr. Trollolo was the greatest Russian yodeler. Buttercup Shed Construction Company offers discount for third-time shed owners. Oh my gosh, we forgot.
Oh yeah, we need to.
We forgot to pour one out for Terry Jones of Monty Python fame, Arthur Two Sheds Jackson.
Too bad.
Unfortunately, no
the
longer.
The wrong was. Python yep. was taken.
Is that right?
The wrong Terry.
Well,
yeah. One of them is obnoxious, horrible sexual harasser a-hole, and the other was
Arthur Two Sheds Jackson. I did not know that about Terry
Gilliam's been really, really. I mean, it sucks because I love a lot of his work.
Yeah, but, I did not know that. So, oh, God, that sucks.
Not a fan.
WordOrigins.org, your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. Closing concessions. Is the Seattle Live Show getting Mitch McConnell? No! Draft
what
Adam Schiff.
What does that mean?
Getting Mitch McConnell, I assume, like, you know, sort of turned like into nothing. Yeah. Yeah, whatever. But not. No. It's, it has nothing to do with that, I promise. Draft Adam Schiff at the brokered convention. Derek. Two votes for Denver live show. That's Puzzle in a Thunderstorm law. Susan Boyle sings I Dreamed a Dream of 56% on T3BE. We'll find out in a minute. I accept all the cookies. Big Easy Blasphemy. Sam Buck, a string of unpronounceable characters. David in Brooklyn. Rhonda the Baked Alaskan. CampQuest.org, CampQuest.org, CampQuest.org. The Mandalorian's armor is made by the woman DeLorean. Well, all right. Malika Chandler. Abacus Flinch. Soggy Pants. E. Norma Stitz. Nice. I haven't seen that one before. Matthew Vernon. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. Don't take ramp building advice from a podcast. Heather Loveridge. Sakashite Fukasumi. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium. Sam Danow. Ian and Allie. Danny Rosari. Eli Bosnick. Zabby. Alexandra Chalupa, a.k.a. Natasha Crunchwrap. That always makes me laugh. Hey, Laser Lips, your mama was a snowblower. Thomas, have we done a short circuit joke recently? Like I
don't know.
Yeah, I don't
know. Short circuit.
Yeah, that's a good old classic 1985 movie. Mitchell, Brian, punch it. 87% effective clown horn is the best clown horn. Oh, yeah. Phil Ferguson put Brian to the test.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%. That always still makes me laugh, too. And, of course, our all-time great, he who shall never be dethroned, but keep trying, Conrad Michaels. Thank you all so much. And again, remember, you can get in on this delightful part of the show. Head on over, patreon.com/law. Sign up for $5. Come on, you can do it.
All right. Time for T3BE.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
Talk to the hand. I need your clothes. That's one of my mission parameters. Trust me. I know now why you cry.
All right.
Answer time. Not a lot of faith in this one, but who knows?
So, this question was, several defendants, senior executives of a corporation, were charged with securities fraud. Government called as a witness another executive of the corporation who had not been charged and had been given immunity to authenticate handwritten notes that she had made after meetings of the corporation's management team in which the alleged fraud was discussed. The witness testified she had prepared the notes on her own initiative to help her remember what had happened at the meetings. After this testimony, the government offered the notes into evidence to establish what had happened at the meetings. Yet now, you eliminated immediately off the bat, B, no, because the witnesses...
Well, just for everybody, the question is, should the witnesses' notes be admitted?
Right, sorry. I was just going to go right on that.
Forgot.
Yeah. Should the witnesses' notes be admitted, as usual, two no answers, two yes answers. You eliminated immediately, no, because the witnesses' immunity agreement with the government makes her notes untrustworthy and thus substantially more prejudicial than probative. Good elimination, right? That grant of immunity was given.
Seems like nonsense.
Yeah, after the notes were made. And so does not affect the reliability of the notes, right? And then in addition, right, once you've been immunized, I mean, one of the fundamental justifications behind giving immunity is that that witness is now presumably more free to tell the truth, right? In any event, that's a nonsense answer. Good job eliminating it. You also eliminated, I think, one of the attractive distractors in yes, because they are business records.
Yeah, that was an interesting call.
Yeah, business records are an exception to the hearsay rule, but business records must be a regular practice, and they must be kept.
Gosh dang right. So what you're saying is I analyzed that perfectly.
Absolutely. 100%.
Because I said exactly all that. Yeah, oh, man.
You did.
You know, Andrew, I'm learning a lot from you. Aww. You can, you know, take some credit for the fact that I answered that perfectly.
So that leaves either A, your answer, no, because the notes are hearsay, not within any exception, kind of a, you know, default answer, or D, yes, because they are past recollections recorded. And I am pleased to tell you, Thomas, yes. A is the right answer.
All right.
They might arguably be past recollections recorded, but the way in which you introduce a past recollection recorded is by having the witness testify that they do not presently recall enough to testify without the notes, right? So you might say, like, suppose I wanted to introduce, what kids you decided to hang out with in high school, and you would say, well, I don't presently have a recollection of what I was doing, you know, in 1990, but I kept a calendar. And if you let me consult my calendar, then I can say I was hanging out with PJ and Squee drinking beers.
And wouldn't you know it, I didn't write, I am a rapist in my own calendar.
Yeah. And
so I guess I'm free to go.
And that was obviously using the Brett Kavanaugh example, because it struck me at the time how odd it was that nobody was pointing out that a high school kid was essentially keeping the kind of routine records that are used to introduce something in court. I can tell you, as somebody whose dream it was to be on the Supreme Court when I was 16 years old, and also now, that I did not, as a high school student, maintain records which would qualify as past recollections recorded. But in any event,
I'm so glad. You know, it's really clicking for me because, you know, hearsay is so difficult. For me, for some reason, I just can't get in my mind, but I feel like I'm getting slightly better. And past recollection. So in other words, this is a reason that the notes would actually be better evidence than testimony.
Exactly
because
right.
It's like, I don't know. Yeah, whatever. Who knows? Whereas normally you just want it to be, the testimony would be the best evidence, right?
Right.
And so you, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Remember the whole thing that this is, I love the way you're sort of putting it together. And again, this is what the show was meant to do. Like, not lament the decline of Western civilization as a criminally insane game show host steers us into the abyss. Like the understanding the way these rules interact and that there is a real purpose behind it, right? Like the reason you don't want hearsay, the reason there's a general rule about hearsay is it's unreliable. The hearsay itself is not subject to cross-examination. It could be self-serving, right? There are lots and lots of reasons why you would say, well, I don't want to put somebody on the phone, I don't want to put somebody on the stand. Who's, I was thinking the telephone game in the back of my head. That's why the malapropism came out. But, you know, to say, well, Sam told Susie that Sally saw Johnny, and you're like, great, just get to the end of the chain and let's call Johnny to the stand.
Yeah, that part I get. The part that's difficult about hearsay is that somehow everything is hearsay. I don't, it's like almost everything.
That's true.
You're like, oh, what if I'm just telling you what I saw? Somehow that's also hearsay. I don't know.
It is. If I could get, that's my second wish. So my first wish would be to get non-lawyers to understand that circumstantial evidence is still really, really good evidence. Right. But my second wish would be to get people to understand that hearsay is almost everything. So, I think you're right. So congratulations. Right. You're definitely right on T3BE.
Yeah. Well, what's my percentage? Has that moved at all? Or
the I guess the noodle has moved. You are rounding up to 55%. It is 54.6%. So we're getting, like, hey.
Well, that's less exciting.
Hey, we're getting there. We're gonna get that number starting with the six real soon.
I don't
now.
Think that really moved the noodle. That's just like the tip of the noodle just curved up slightly. But the rest of
look,
the noodle
look,
is still just
the moral arc of the noodle is long. But it bends towards justice.
It bends toward probably roughly 55%. Let's be honest. It doesn't really the moral arc of the noodle. Oh, that's awesome. Good. That was a good one, Andrew. Okay, well, let's find out who our big winner is this week. Hop in that time machine, see who moved their noodle.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Yeah, Thomas, this week's winner is Odin the Law Dog at Canum Advocatus on Twitter, which, by the way, even if you'd gotten this wrong, I kind of want to give a shout out to Odin the Law Dog. That's pretty fantastic. Who says, it's gotta be A. She was given immunity, so her Fifth Amendment rights to self-incrimination wouldn't prevent her from testifying. So unless she actually says, I can't remember, there goes D. She made them on her own accord for her own memory, so no C, and B is nonsense. I should have just read Odin the Law Dog. Like, that was exactly what I said, but like 87,000 times shorter. Perfectly concise, exactly correct. I want to tell you, Thomas, a lot of people got this one wrong on Twitter. There were a lot of C's. There were some D's. There was a B here and there. Not too many people got it right. So congratulations. You got a tough one. And back to Odin. Sorry,
there's a reason that you and I are the professional lawyers.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, congratulations, Odin the Law Dog. Everyone, give them a follow at Canem, Canem _ Advocatus, Advocatus. Canem Advocatus, or search Twitter for Odin the Law Dog. Give him a follow. Super cute little picture of a dog. It's just, you've got to see this. So
not everyone can do it, Andrew. Just you and I, professional lawyers, and a dog. And also that cat from Buttercup.
Yeah, Buttercup's Legal Services. A dog in a top hat. Difficult. But, you know, there you go.
Only professionals like you and me and that cat and that dog. All right. we will. Sorry that Andrew blew it and we didn't get to baseball law, which I know everybody loves. But we'll find a way. We'll get back to that somehow. And we will also see you folks for Rapid Response Friday.
See you then.
You betray the law! Law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is a copyrighted production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. Opening Arguments is produced with the assistance of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, our transcriptionist, Heather Loveridge, production assistant, Ashley Smith, and with the generous assistance of our volunteer unofficial researcher, Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our merch and our live shows and also heads up the OA Wiki project. Follow them at OA Wiki. And a big thank you to our Facebook group moderators, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian, and Teresa. Check out the Opening Arguments community on Facebook. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith for creating the fabulous OA theme song, which is used with permission.